Excuse me, Bhavet. One becomes. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When the Lord assumes a human-like body to show mercy to His devotees, He engages in such pastimes as will attract those who hear about them and become dedicated to Him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has innumerable expansions of His transcendental form, who eternally exists in the spiritual world. This material world is only a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, where everything is manifested without inebriety. There, everything is its original existence, free from the domination of time. Time cannot deteriorate or interfere with the conditions in the spiritual world, where different manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are the recipients of the worship of different living entities in their constitutional spiritual positions. In the spiritual world, all existence is unadulterated goodness. The goodness found in the material world is contaminated by the modes of passion and ignorance. The saying that the human form of life is the best position for devotional service has its special significance because only in this form can a living entity revive his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The human form is considered the highest state in the cycle of the species of life in the material world. If one takes advantage of this highest kind of material form, one can regain his position of devotional service to the Lord. Incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead appear in all the species of life, although this is inconceivable to the human brain. The Lord's pastimes are differentiated according to the appreciating capacity of the different types of bodies of the living entities. The Supreme Lord bestows the most merciful benedictions upon human society when he appears in his human form. It is then that humanity gets the opportunity to engage in different kinds of eternal service to the Lord. Special natural appreciation of the descriptions of a particular pastime of Godhead indicates the constitutional position of a living entity. Adoration, servitorship, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love are the five primary relationships with Krishna. The highest perfectional stage of the conjugal relationship enriched by many sentiments and gives the maximum relishable mellow to the devotees. The Lord appears in different incarnations as a fish, a tortoise, a boar, as Parashuram, Lord Ram, Buddha, and so on, to reciprocate the different appreciations of living entities in different stages of evolution. The conjugal relationship of amorous love, called Parakya Ras, is the unparalleled perfection of love exhibited by Lord Krishna and his devotees. So I'm going to stop reading there because there's so much to say. And Prabhupada kind of goes off into Sahajya discussion for the next paragraph of the purport. So in the Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter in the eighth verse, Krishna describes three reasons why he appears on the planet. He says, Paritanaya sadhunam, to protect the sadhus, Vinishaya chaduskritam, to kill the demons, and Dharma starptartanataya, reestablish Dharma. But he can kill the demons in many different ways. You know, he does it all the time with wars and sinking ships and blowing up planes and all kinds of things. So he doesn't have any problem killing demons. Even a little bug, a tiny little microscopic entity that we can't even see with our own eyes, can kill many, many, many people. And so Krishna himself is not really necessary to take care of that business. And Krishna can kind of hire his devotees even to take care of reestablishing Dharma. He did that with many of his devotees, with Yudhisthira in the Mahabharata Lila, but also with Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and so many other great devotees. You'll see them all tomorrow. They're all coming for the evening program. So all those wonderful, highly empowered Vaishnavas help Krishna to reestablish religious principles. And whenever necessary, they revive. Bhaktivinoda Thakur revived the spiritual following of Krishna, even though it was practically speaking dead, and then Bhaktisiddhanta kept it going, and then Srila Prabhupada also kept it going. So all these things can be done. In the Brahma Samhita even, Lord Brahma explains Shristi Titi Pralayastadana Shaktireka Chayeva Yasyu Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga, that Durga and the material energy, they can take care of a lot of this stuff. It's not a problem. And she does do that, Durga Devi. She does do that on behalf of Krishna. She takes care of that. But there's another kind of protection that only Krishna can give to his devotees. And that kind of protection is more than just protecting the body. Sometimes we think of protection, we pray to Krishna, protect us. We hear different prayers by devotees to protect them. When we get in the car, we chant, especially if we're going from Calcutta to Mayapur. We chant the Nisringa prayers probably all the way there. We become very Krishna conscious because we want Krishna to protect us. But we're not necessarily thinking that even if we die on the way to Mayapur or in Mayapur in a transcendental place, Krishna will protect us by taking back to God. We want to make it to Mayapur. We want our physical form to get there. So we're concerned about our health and our physical welfare, and in that sense we look at the Lord for protection. But from the Lord's point of view, and from a realized devotee's point of view, that kind of protection is trivial. The material body is destined to die at some point or another. If it doesn't die today, it'll die tomorrow. It's like Prabhupada says, from the day of birth, you're one day dead. So all of us are on that conveyor belt, and we're headed towards whatever we're headed towards. And that's where Krishna comes in. Because Krishna wants to protect us by giving us opportunities to achieve spiritual perfection, which means going back to his lotus feet, to our eternal spiritual position, where we're not subject to repeated birth and death. We're not subjected to disease, getting old. These things don't occur, like it said in the purport, that time is conspicuous by its absence. It's also in the Brahma Samhita at the very end, that the time is conspicuous by the quality of breaking things down. It doesn't cause things to deteriorate. It just keeps things in order. So we know what Ashtakaliya Leela looks like, what Krishna does in the morning and the afternoon and all the different times of the day. And so people can be waiting for him when he's coming back from the cowherd fields, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't deteriorate the living entity, and it doesn't cause him pain and suffering. So Krishna, being very kind and very anxious, more anxious, Prabhupada described, Krishna is more anxious to have us go back to Godhead than we are anxious to go there. Even we who are sitting in this room, who have come here to celebrate Krishna's birthday, sometimes, I know at least for myself, perhaps not for you, but sometimes I forget that I want to go back to Godhead. And I think that I want a lot of other things instead. There's a sale at some store, or, you know, I want people to like me, or I want some kind of gift, or I want that. Sorry, no, well, I'm kind of over that. But anyway, we want different things, and we forget it. Even simple, trivial things overshadow our desire to go back to Godhead. So Krishna comes to help us out, and he gives us protection from our own mind and senses by enabling us to become absorbed in his pastimes. And that can only take place when Krishna appears in his human form and engages in loving pastimes with his devotees. Queen Kunti, she offers 26 prayers, which were very dear to Srila Prabhupada, and they're in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're in the 8th chapter of the first canto, and 5 of those prayers are dedicated to discussing Krishna's appearance on the planet. So I would like to take a little bit of time and look at those prayers. Due to time constraint, because I think at 9:30 I'm going to get a hook, so I'm not going to chant the prayers, although I'd like to because they're very beautiful. But just to get an idea of the different reasons that Kunti lists, many, many reasons why different people think or say that Krishna appeared. She says, some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings. And others say that he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees, in which family Krishna was born. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya Hills. So some people say that the unborn, because Krishna is unborn, he doesn't have to take birth. We have to take birth. We don't get to choose our parents. We don't get to choose our place of birth. We don't get to choose our time of birth. And probably if we could choose, we might choose not to be born, being pushed out of the womb in a very messy, uncomfortable position. Sometimes we glorify birth. Now they put Mendi all over the stomach of the lady, and it's considered a very, very glorified thing. But the actual process of birth is a mess, and it's painful, and it's not, necessarily fun. And even the process of children growing up, and it's filled with wonder, it's beautiful, children are beautiful, they grow up and they keep you up at night and they're expensive and so many different things. So it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed blessing. But Krishna, he doesn't have to have any of that. He chooses how he wants to appear, in whose womb he doesn't even appear in a womb. Who he wants is his parents. He chooses them. He chooses the most qualified persons who have loving devotion for him. And in this case, he appears to Devaki and Vasudev. They performed great austerities for many, many, many years, proving themselves worthy and asking him for a benediction, which he granted. They said, we want a son like you, and who's like Krishna? No one's like Krishna. So Krishna said, well, I guess I have to do it myself, right? Because I can't, there's nobody who like me who can do it. So 3 times Krishna agreed to appear as the son of Vasudev and Devaki in different incarnations, but we won't talk about that here. So Prabhupada points out that Krishna is not really born. He appears, he decides to come, and he masks that appearance in an apparently birth-like situation. It looks like birth, but it's not, because it's not contained within the walls of the 3 modes of material nature. It's not forced. It's not predetermined like other births might be. So in that sense, Krishna is unborn. His birth is transcendental. We read this morning, I don't know how many of you were here, but this morning there was a little reading from the Krishna book in which it was described how Krishna appeared in the prison house of Kamsa before Vasudev and Devaki in a 4-armed form. He appeared with helmet and earrings and all the regalia of Vasudev Krishna, or Narayan. And he did that for a couple of reasons. He did it, one, because he wanted to prove to them that this is God. And just to let you know, don't think that I'm born as your son exclusively. I'm actually the Supreme Lord. And he also did it to bewilder the atheists. That was described in the purport. And he also did it to satisfy his promise to Vasudev and Devaki to become their son for the 3rd time. Then Devaki speaks, and before I get into that, I want to read the next prayer by Queen Kunti. She said, others say that since both Vasudev and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken birth as their son. Undoubtedly, you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. So in this, in the beginning, that place where Vasudeva Krishna appears in front of Vasudeva and Devaki, she expresses to him that she's very frightened. Her brother has done horrible things, killed so many children already, and she's afraid that if he comes and he sees that her eighth child is born now, he'll kill him. So there's this four-armed form of Krishna standing, or Narayan standing in front of Devaki, and she's saying, well, if Kamsa comes, he's going to kill you too. Something is going on there, right? We're praying for Krishna to protect us. She has that form, that with the conch and the club and the wheel and the disc, you know, that Sudarshan chakra. He's got that big club in his hand. I was once in L.A., and we had made a conch club wheel and lotus above the altar. And Prabhupada came in, and he liked it very much. And one of the things he said, the disc and the club, that's how Krishna takes care of the demons. And the lotus flower and the conch shell, that's how Krishna takes care of the devotees. I'll read a little something about that in a minute. So here he is. He's standing there. He's got that club and he's got that disc, but Devaki is still worried. Uh-oh, if Kamsa sees you, he's going to kill you. So please appear as a baby. Now, what's wrong with this equation, right? He just killed seven babies, or six babies. He didn't get to kill Durga. And one was, so actually five babies. He killed five babies, attempted to kill another. And now Devaki is saying, well, I don't want you to appear in this form, because if he comes, he'll see you and then he'll try to kill you. I better you appear as a baby. Because that motherly affection that Krishna was trying to evoke in her, and that had caused her to pray for Krishna to be her son, was now kicking in. So she had this mixed rasa, that was partially awe and reverence, and also there was an element of motherly affection. And so she wanted to see Krishna in that form as a child, as a baby, and she wanted to be able to protect him. Not only that he protect her, she was totally afraid, but at the same time, she wanted to protect him. And we'll see a little bit later that feeling of the mother wanting to protect Krishna, acting as if he's helpless, God being helpless, is that sentiment which gives God the most, or one of the sentiments that gives God the most pleasure. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in several verses in the fourth chapter, verse 10 through 13, it's described that the appearance of Krishna is particularly amazing, more amazing than any other incarnation of Krishna that appears. Because Krishna isn't the only human-like appearance of the Supreme Lord. Ram is also in a human form. Lord Buddha is also in a human form. Kaki is also will be in a human form. But Krishna's appearance in a human form is special, and here it's described in these four verses. I've put them all together. It says, Narayan, the four primary expansions, Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradumna, and Aniruddha, Matsya, and the other Leela incarnations, the Yuga avatars, the Manvantara incarnations, and as many other incarnations as they are, all descend in the body of Lord Krishna. In this way, the complete Supreme Godhead, Lord Krishna himself, appears. At that time, therefore, Lord Vishnu is present in the body of Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna kills the demons through him. So when Krishna appears as this beautiful baby with beautiful curly hair and beautiful eyes like lotus petals and marks on his feet and so many other transcendental indications of his divinity, he's all these spiritual persons wrapped up, all the incarnations that ever were, they're wrapped up in Krishna. And Vishnu is there also, and the demons are killed by Vishnu, not by Krishna. Krishna doesn't do that himself. He is more intent on nourishing the pastimes of his devotees. That's really what he wants to do. Prabhupada describes that there are two really main reasons why Krishna appears, and one of them is for his pleasure, that he wants to enjoy with his devotees. And the other reason is that he wants to inspire persons to become his devotees. And he wants to give the devotees who are already interested in being devotees something to talk about, something to think about. Last night we had a little bit of program, and I see Hemanga Gopi's smiling face there. It's reminding me that last night we had a little program with some devotees, and we were doing little skits of Krishna Leela. And it was so nice to just remember Krishna's pastimes. I asked if I could do it here, and Mother Akuti said, no, don't do it, because then everybody will leave the kitchen and come in here to engage in the pastimes of Krishna. So I don't want to do that, because then we won't have a feast, which is another way that Krishna appears and gives us his mercy. But he has many, many ways that he gives us his mercy, and he tries to pull us in. He tries to draw us in, and what is unique about Krishna's childhood appearance and his pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. Even his pastimes in Dwarka and in Mathura and in Kurukshetra, all those pastimes in the apparent material sphere, in the material world, they're designed to pull us in, to play on our heartstrings, to make us realize what true loving relationships look like, what they feel like, how they manifest themselves, so that we can do plays about them, so that we can talk about them, so that we can sing about them, so that we can remember them, so that Pran Govinda Prabhu can look up and tell us millions of stories about them from all the different scriptures that are also there to help us remember Krishna. So this is why all the main reasons why Krishna appeared. And to go on with Kunti's prayers, it says, others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and you have appeared to diminish the trouble. But we already discussed that Krishna doesn't need to do that. Even Lord Brahma himself says he doesn't need to do that. Prabhupada says in the purport of this verse that Krishna bugles his conch shell, and with that conch shell bugle, he says, my devotees will never perish. So that's the sound of the conch shell, the sound of the victory vibration of the conch shells. We hear in the Bhagavad Gita also when Krishna and Arjuna blew their conch shells and all the Pandavas blew their conch shells, it brought terror into the heart. It shattered the hearts of the Kauravas. But when they blew their conch shell, it didn't do that to the Pandavas, because Krishna's conch shell says, my devotees will never perish. Hari, hari. Hari, bol. So my devotees will never perish. And that means they won't take birth. They'll go back to me. They'll engage in loving pastimes with me. They'll be able to serve me with love and devotion. And that's Krishna's unique message to the devotees who are engaged in his service. Srila Prabhupada makes a cute statement in this purport I thought I'd share. He says that he starts talking about people who pretend they're God or say that they're God, and they'd say that we're God. He said, but as soon as they come to get some toothache, they immediately say, oh, doctor, help me, save me. If you are God, save yourself. Why go to a doctor? Prabhupada said. So God can save himself, right? He doesn't need Mother Jasoda to just protect him. He doesn't need the residents of Vrindavan to help him hold up Govardhan Hill with their sticks. He doesn't need that. He doesn't need his father, Nanda Maharaj, to protect him. He doesn't need Balaram to protect him. Every day, Mother Jasoda would tell Balaram, you go out with your brother, and you're the older brother. You make sure he doesn't get hurt. And whenever Balaram doesn't go, Krishna does some mischief, you'll notice when you read. So Krishna does some extra mischief when Balaram's not there. And Balaram is always looking for Krishna's welfare. Krishna's been eating dirt. Have not. that so? Krishna's been eating dirt, Mother Jasoda, you better do something, because Krishna's been eating dirt. So, but Krishna doesn't need the protection of his devotees, but he loves when the devotees want to protect him. When Krishna's playing with his cowherd friends, when he loses, then he gets to carry his cowherd friends on his shoulders, right? He gets to carry the winners on the shoulders of the losers. So when Krishna loses, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he loses. When we lose, we get so fried, right? We don't want to lose. I'm not a loser. I got to be number one. But Krishna sometimes loses, and when he loses, he gets the privilege, he feels the satisfaction of getting to carry his devotees on his shoulder. And he mentions, I'll read in a minute, he mentions that this gives him pleasure, that his devotees, his cowherd boyfriends, they say to him, "You think you're such a big guy? You think you're something special? Well, guess what? We're equal. Actually, we're not even equal. I'm better than you. I'm on your shoulders. I beat you." So this pastimes, these emotional exchanges between Krishna and his devotees are what attract the minds of the devotees like us and bring us closer and closer and closer and closer to Krishna, because they allow us to remember him and to interact with him in service. Sukadeva Goswami in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he chants this wonderful verse, yat kirtanam, yat smaranam, yat ikshanam, yat bandhanam, yat shravanam, yat aranam, lokasya sadyo vinoti kalmasa, tasmai subhadra, shravashe namo namaha. That by hearing about Krishna, by seeing him, by touching him, by serving him, by doing all these things, everything becomes subhadra, everything becomes auspicious. So by just putting these leelas of Krishna in our head, by putting them in the ether from our mouth, by allowing each other to exchange, because the pure devotees, what do? And the Bhagavad Gita explains, what do? They talk to each other. They enlighten each other. They enliven each other by exchanging these pastimes. They talk about Krishna. And because they talk about Krishna, they become fired up. And then they want to serve Krishna. They want to do different things for Krishna. They want to make amazing decorations and cook amazing feasts and hang 40 gallons, 70 gallons of milk that's been turned into yogurt to make Shrikhand. They want to do so many different amazing things for Krishna and his devotees because they become inspired by Krishna's wonderful, amazing pastimes. Prabhupada speaks in this purport about how this ikshanam, this seeing, that we can just sit and look at the deity of Krishna, and especially today. We can sit and just look at the deity of Krishna. And when we look at the deity of Krishna, we see so many things. Somebody may look and just see bling, right? It's really shiny. And wow, a lot of flowers. I was in Vrindavan. I can't remember the holiday it was, but it was really, really decorated. And one of my Guru God brothers had brought some yoga people from New York to take darshan of Radhe Shyam. So one of them was a flower salesperson. And she took darshan and she said, "You know, that for the amount of money it would cost to buy all the flowers on the altar today in Vrindavan, in New York, we could buy a building." So she looked at the decoration and that's what she saw. She saw, amazing, you've got all these flowers, you've invested all this money, what to speak of devotion, time, energy, and you've put it all together, and if we tried to do that in my business, it would cost us enough to buy a building. So different people look at the altar and see different things, but for devotees, we see beautiful forms of Radha and Krishna and Gaura Nithai and Krishna and Balaram. We see the love of the devotees manifest in beautiful flower arrangements and gorgeous pastimes unfold before us, this Leela of Manasi Ganga. It comes alive when we look at the manifestation of the devotee's work, the devotee's seva. So we can sit here, Prabhupada says, that we can sit before the deity of Krishna and see him thinking, how nicely dressed is Krishna? How nicely dressed is Radharani? If one has no ability to chant, or if one's mind is so disturbed that one cannot fix it upon Krishna, one is given this chance. Here's the deity. Simply see him. If one is engaged in the service of the deity, there is good chance of his always seeing him 24 hours a day, while cleansing the floor of the temple, while dressing the deity, while bathing the deity, or while offering him food, one will always see him. So the final prayer of Queen Kunti, she says, very similar to Sukadeva Goswami's thing, Shrinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Abhikshasha Smaranti Nandanti Tavedi Tamjana Taeva Pashyanti Acharena Tavakam Bhava Parva Ho Paramam Padam Bhujam. O Krishna, those who continuously hear and chant and repeat your transcendental activities or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. So this is how Krishna protects his devotees, that by offering them an opportunity to remember the Leela of Krishna, to sit in front of the deity and see him, to render service, even like washing the floor, to converse and talk to other devotees and enlighten and liven one another, to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's described that Srimad Bhagavatam has arisen like the sun to dissipate the darkness of the age of Kalish. Srimad Bhagavatam is an incarnation of Krishna. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking in Bhagavad Gita. It's not just some crazy conversation that we can take or leave. It's a conversation between Krishna and his devotee. And even persons who heard that conversation, like Sanjay, their hair was standing on end. They had amazing realizations, and those realizations are available to us if we hear Bhagavad Gita with rapt attention, if we hear Srimad Bhagavatam with rapt attention. All the leelas in the Bhagavatam will bring us closer and closer and closer and closer and closer to Krishna, will clean the unwanted things from our heart, and make us able to exchange and see the leela of Krishna in full color. They bring the apakat lila into focus. They take it. When Krishna appears in the material world, his unmanifest pastimes become temporarily manifest in the material world so that everyone can see them. Not everybody realizes them, but everyone can see them. Like Krishna was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Duryodhan saw him. He invited him to lunch. Krishna refused. He said, I'd rather go eat at my friends. They say you get indigestion if you eat the house of an enemy. I don't want to go to your place. But Duryodhan had prepared a huge feast, and Krishna preferred to eat the banana peels that were offered by Vidura's wife. So because they were offered with love and devotion, so we can come to understand Krishna and see Krishna, so that when he does come before us in this form as the deity, we actually see him. When he does come before us in the form of his holy name, we actually see him. We actually relate. We don't just schnick-schnick Ram, but we actually see and relate to and have exchanges with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That comes from the purification that we get by hearing and chanting about him, about his friends, his devotees, their activities, their service, their realizations. We get to share them so that we can make rapid advancement and ultimately connect with the Supreme Lord. So there's one more set of verses which I'd like to share, and they're from the Adi Leela also, chapter 4. Chapter 4 of the Adi Leela ultimately speaks about how or why Lord Chaitanya appeared. But besides that, at the beginning, it explains why Lord Krishna appeared. And these verses are very, very beautiful. If one cherishes pure loving devotion to me, thinking of me as his son, his friend, or his beloved, regarding himself as great and considering me as equal or inferior, I become subordinate to him. So these verses explain why or how Krishna exchanges with the devotees in the spiritual world. And when we taste that, when we taste that loving exchange of Krishna exchange, he'll be saying to him, look, buddy, we're going to pick you up by the hands and feet. We're going to throw you off the boat. It gives us some idea. But in order to relate to that, we have to become purified, which means we have to study the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita as Srila Prabhupada gave it to us and become able to relish those pastimes as they're meant to be relished. We're coming close to the Leela of Damodar, where Mother Jasoda binds Krishna. Queen Kunti, in one of her other prayers, says that this pastime is bewildering to her. How does the Supreme Personality of Godhead get bound by a rope by his mother? But we understand that Krishna allows himself to be bound by the devotion, by the love of his devotee. And that's the only thing that can bind him. And when Krishna gets bound by that loving relationship of the devotee, then he allows the devotee to bind him. He allows the devotee to play with him. He allows the devotee to be on the chariot while he's the chariot driver. And the chariot, the person who's fighting says, take my chariot between the two armies. And he goes, Jai, yes, sir. And he takes them there. So this relationship of God with his devotee can't be taken cheaply. It has to be understood by the process of purification that Srila Prabhupada gave us. And although that process of purification in and of itself is not sufficient to allow us to enter into these supreme pastimes, it opens the doors. Someone was explaining, I think Mahamaya Prabhu was explaining in a recent Bhagavad Gita class, a Bhagavatam class, about an analogy of the gates opening when you chant the holy name. But those gates to the spiritual world, Krishna has the key to the last one. He lets you in from the inside. You cannot break down that gate. You can get to all the gates, or most of them, but to see Krishna face to face in the spiritual world, Krishna has to let you in. He has to give you that realization. He has to destroy the last vestiges of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. And that means that we have to engage in his loving service. We have to have an abhishek. And we have to remember him all day and remind each other of him and chant his glories and eat his prasadam later on. And be happy together in Krishna's service. So I'll stop there, and if there's any questions, we can have discussion, or once someone wants to add something or correct me or whatever. Silence. A boring. Yes, again. Is there a mic? Are you going to break into song?
Hare Krishna. In the purport, it was mentioned about becoming amorous lovers of Krishna. Mm. And that's mentioned so frequently in Prabhupada's purports.
Right.
At the same time, we understand that there are so many manifestations of Krishna to so many different kinds of devotees.
It's true.
In your understanding, did Srila Prabhupada intend for all of us, everyone, to become amorous lovers of Krishna?
I just read something about that, actually. I'm trying to think where I read it. Anyway, I just read something about that, that we should aspire for that. Our line aspires for that. But maybe it was something by Gorgo Vindamaraj, because it might have been in the Bindu that I read it. That's the highest goal, and of course we're Americans, so we always aspire for the highest thing, right? No one wants to be second best. But in the spiritual world, wherever we situate ourselves in our eternal relationship to Krishna, we're totally satisfied. So it's not like if we come up with a cowherd boy, we're going to go, oh, shucks, all that work and I didn't even make it. Actually, Gop Kumar in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, he goes through so much to get to Goloka Vrindavan, and he won't go anywhere else. He's offered many opportunities to stay in Dwarka and so many things, even Mathura. He doesn't want it. He's driven. But when he gets there, he's a cowherd boy. And he's perfectly, wonderfully happy to be there, surrounded by the gopis. There's that wonderful picture of Krishna holding Gop Kumar really closely, and the gopis standing there with garlands. They welcome him. And then he at the very end, he kind of goes full circle. And at the end, he is requested by Srimati Radharani to go down here again and become the spiritual master of somebody else who needs help to get back there. So he does have a relationship with the gopis, with Srimati Radharani, but he's a coward. But he's a coward boy. He's only a coward boy. So we can only talk about these things with our mundane comparison tendency so much before we start making offenses. So, but we have to understand that we have whatever relationship we're in is perfect, and the other, your better half, wants to say something.
On the tail of that question, then, sometimes I think when we talk about, you know, spiritual identity and all of that, the focus is on looking at ourselves from the outside instead of looking from the inside out. So it seems to me that rather than aspiring, I'm asking, is it correct to say that if we just focus on wanting to see Krishna and serve Krishna, then whatever we naturally are or whatever Krishna wants us to be will be given to us?
Thank you. That was actually something I wanted to say, but I didn't say, is that we are not meant to focus on what our eternal relationship with is Krishna. If you notice, it was briefly mentioned in one of the purports I read that Prabhupada said we would become attracted naturally to some of the leelas of Krishna, would draw us in, and we would be able to understand from that what our eternal constitutional relationship is with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But our desire shouldn't even be to see Krishna. Our desire should be to serve Krishna and to act in such a way that Krishna will see us. And that Krishna not only will see us, but when he sees us, he won't go, oh, brother. But he'll go, there's my devotee. So there's that one again. I've been trying so hard to do something with that person. We want to act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased to see us, that Krishna will notice that we're at Mangal Arati, that we're chanting his name, that we're trying, despite so many impediments, to develop love for him. And actually, that's our main focus, to develop love for him. We try to understand. We get so many questions sometimes in Bhagavatam class about this and this and this and this, and it says this here and that there, and who was this and what was this, and what about the Garga Samhita and blah, 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 blah. But all this gyan stuff is only good if it helps us develop love for Krishna. We're not in this to be scholars or scholastic. That's not what we're trying to do. And, you know, Prabhupada wanted us to know the scripture, but he wanted us to develop love for Krishna more. And they go hand in hand to a certain extent. But after a while, if we fall into any of the pitfalls, renunciation, jnana, karma, then we run into trouble, and it hinders our bhakti. It gets in the way of our bhakti instead of enhancing. So our goal is to serve Krishna and develop love for him, and then everything will come into place. Hare Krishna. So, Chaturatma, is my time up? Sorry. Anybody else have any question? Yeah, Prime Govinda Prabhu.
That was a very nice class, thank you. I was going to add
I figured. How did I know that?
1968, Upendra Prabhu asked Prabhupada in San Francisco, and he addressed him as a Swamiji. So he says, Swamiji, how is that if you think that we are related with Krishna as a paramour lover when our relationship as a father and son? So Prabhupada was very mercifully explained that. Well, this is not exactly like this, but all the relationship is very beautiful. Then he put a pause and then he says, if you feel you have a relationship with the Lord as a lover, then when the devotional service will mature, it will manifest. We should not worry about it. Right. Very nicely, Prabhupada.
We should not worry about it. Yeah. Prabhupada said that many times.
Yes.
Don't. I mean, here we are trying to have an argument whether we should call women Mataji or Prabhu, and we're worried about whether we have a relationship of Madhurya Ras, or, I mean, we have a ways to go, so we should just take off from where we're walking instead of trying to smash into a wall running. Anybody else? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, all glories to Shri Prabhupada. Krishna Janmashtami ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees.